Good evening and welcome to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. I'm Rob Mulhern and I'm joined in the studio tonight by Brendan Horgan, Gav Sidhu and David Brenchley. Now, coming up on the show tonight, we're going to be talking about England qualifying for the World Cup in Wembley last night. We're also going to be taking a look back at Britain's disappointing performance in the World Amateur Boxing Championships in Milan. We were talking exclusively to Team GB coach Kelvin Travis this afternoon. Also on the show, we're going to be talking cricket, Formula One, and of course, Andy Murray crashing out of the US Open. But first, Brendan, you were in Wembley last night. Brilliant result for England again.
Yeah, it was an extremely good result. 5-1 they won in the end against Croatia. Frank Lampard got two goals. Steven Gerrard got two. Wayne Rooney and the controversial Eduardo got one for Croatia. But England have now qualified for the 2010 South African World Cup. So, good news. There's no complaints.
Not only qualified, Gav, but in a bit of style. 24 points out of 8 matches.
Well, you can't really complain, can you? And Capello, knowing Capello, he's going to want to go for the last two games, maximum points. He wants to get 10 out of 10.
Brendan, how good, you were in Wembley last night, how good do you think this team is?
It's good. It's an improvement on the team. I wouldn't say the performance completely overwhelmed me last night. I've seen a lot of the press this morning. I've read a lot of things about England being the next Brazil or the next Spain, and I wouldn't get that carried away. I wouldn't. They've now been made third favourites for the tournament, which I disagree with.
Would that not be fair though, Gav? Maybe with, you know, their accumulation of points and how they've played, they've been pretty consistent.
I'd say two things. First of all, Brendan, we were discussing this before the show, right? Now, you said that was a severely weakened Croatian side. I agree 100%, but like, as most people, as most England fans would be saying, if we didn't beat that Croatian side, if it was a draw, if it wasn't a win for us and Croatia beat us, we would have said a severely depleted Croatian side, we should have thrashed them 5-6-1. The amount of chances we created, it should have been a hiding. We did thrash them 5-1. We did get the 3 points. We got 8 wins out of 8. We're in South Africa. No one should be complaining. And secondly, all right, I forgot my second point, so we'll come back to that in a sec.
My point was, it isn't that England weren't good last night, and it isn't that they haven't improved under Capello. It's more the case of Croatia aren't the team they used to be. Croatia aren't the same team that beat England 2-0, and people are looking at this result as kind of a defeat of a really big team, and Croatia aren't a really big team anymore. The standard of their football's dropped. Their defence was woeful.
Oh, it was.
Are people not looking at the bigger picture though here, Bren, as in they could have bet anyone last night, it could have been the Faroe Islands? It's just the fact that they qualified by way of 8 wins.
If you really look at it, you see, I've my brain's frozen again, Brendan.
He's still
in shell shock after the 24 points.
I had a really good point there as well.
What did you think about it last night, David?
I think obviously 5-1, great victory. You can't take that away from the team. But I think there's a lot of improvements. I still don't think Emil Heskey is international quality. I think he needs a few goals. He had a couple of really good chances yesterday, which he should have put away. I think Defoe, maybe even Colton Cole would have. And Glenn Johnson's still a little bit, I don't know, he's not too good defensively. But I thought he had a very good game going forward. Yeah. And I'm always a fan of him. Right midfield position.
It seems like there's a lot of opinion even about what the best team is, what team should be played, but there's also there was points raised last night as to what's going to happen for the remaining two qualifying games. How strong of an England team is going to be put out? Would you have any opinions on that, Gav? Should they bring in the kind of reserves now and give them a run out for the next two games?
I still think a second, you know, not kind of reserve side, but a sort of England B side with still a few first team players in there. I still think they're going to be too strong for Ukraine. And who else have we got left? You know, that one's a bit shaky. We'll come back to that in a sec. But I think whatever team Capello puts out, I think they're going to be too good for Ukraine and the other opponents we're going to have. But going back to people getting too carried away, Brendan, if you look at it, You know, we go back to the World Cup in Germany, before Germany, the players were even saying themselves, you know, we've got a chance to win the World Cup, you know, this is the golden generation, so on so forth. This World Cup qualifying campaign, and still after the game, they're being reserved. It's only the media, maybe, who are getting carried away. The players, and especially the fans.
And Capello.
And Capello are still, you know, they're not getting carried away, and they're taking each game as it comes.
I think what it more was, it was the immediate response to the game when I heard comparisons to Brazil and Spain, and it just made me laugh. It really did make me laugh, because there is no real... Until you see England against a really top-class side, then you can judge them. And to be honest, when they've played top-class sides under Capello, it hasn't always gone well. They couldn't beat the Dutch, they couldn't beat the Germans.
They lost to the French.
They lost to the French. So it's going to be really interesting to see. But before we wrap, Scotland lost last night also to the Netherlands 1-0. Yeah. So if I'm correct, that is them out of the tournament, as well as Northern Ireland. Actually, I think Northern Ireland
still
have...
got a chance.
I think they can boast.
Can they?
Scotland, no, Scotland are completely...
Points. They can get into the playoffs.
No, completely out. Really? Yeah, because Northern Ireland are... I mean, sorry, Norway are above them on goal difference, and they've played all their games now.
But basically, England joined the list of qualifiers already. Obviously, the hosts are South Africa. Ghana are the second African team to qualify. From Asian qualifying group, we have Japan, South Korea, North Korea, and Australia. FIFA seem to think that Australia is in Asia. As well as England, we have the Netherlands and Spain from Europe, and Brazil and Paraguay are the South American qualifying groups. But Argentina are a big struggle.
Goodness me.
Maradona's Argentina are struggling to qualify. But that's your international football roundup there, Rob.
International roundup there, all the back to basics, I suppose, Gav, would...
haven't really got had a break, have they? Because they're back on it this weekend.
What's coming up?
Well, the big game, shall we say, on the Saturday is at Eastlands City, and Adebayor with Toure up against their old side, Arsenal, at 3 o'clock. That's going to be a great game. It really is. That's going to be fantastic stuff. The other big game of the day, 5:30 kickoff at the Lane. Spurs hosting Manchester United elsewhere. Blackburn at home to Wolves. Liverpool at Anfield, at home to Burnley. Portsmouth hosting Bolton. Stoke taking on Chelsea at the Britannia. Sunderland at home to Hull, with Wigan at the DW Stadium taking on Zola's West Ham on the Sunday. It's the Midlands Derby at midday. Birmingham taking on Villa. Fulham taking on Everton at 4:15 at Craven Cottage. In the Championship, QPR at Loftus Road taking on Peterborough. That's 3 o'clock. And in League One, Huddersfield are taking on Brentford. As well as the City game, Adebayor, he is on fire, isn't he? And he's, how many games have they played now? Three?
Three games, three goals.
Do you think he's going to get another one at Eastlands on the Saturday, do you think, Brendan?
No.
You don't?
No, I think the Arsenal defence are too strong for the Manchester. Well, I'm being completely biased. Ask me, what are your guys' opinions? Well, what do you reckon?
Can he keep this up? Is he going to finish with the golden boot at the end of the season?
To be fair to Adebayor, even though I'm not the biggest of his fans, the 2 seasons ago he had a 30-goal season. Last year he wasn't focused, he wasn't happy, he's told us about his football. Now apparently he is happy, he's enjoying the fans love him, he loves the fans, and he's been scoring goals. When Adebayor's on form, he's one of the best strikers in the world. But when he's not on form, he's one of the worst.
That's quite a statement, Brent.
What about prediction? Which way do you see it going?
Well, before we go to predictions, Gav, right? A couple of weeks ago, when you first joined the sports team, we kind of like an initiation where the new member has to have a prediction. Let's just play this. Do you remember this from a couple of weeks ago?
Let me have a listen. Then,
just before we take a music break, quick prediction on McIlroy, how he'll get on this weekend.
Any chance I could give you a prediction after the track?
No chance.
Oh, goodness me.
So there you go. We
were a bit tough on him that night.
But we've got
a prediction for Saturday there.
We've got David, the newest member of the sports team, sitting next to us. So I suppose we're going to have to give it to Dave. Dave, what do you reckon? Manchester City, Arsenal, we want a prediction. We want the people at home to know where to put their money.
I think, they're both in really good form for me. Manchester City at home maybe just have the edge. I don't know. I think they're both strong enough.
Put a score on it, Dave.
I think they'll cancel each other out. I'm going 1-1.
1-1. Yep. Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick music break. When we come back, we're going to be hearing from Kelvin Travis, and he's going to be giving us a roundup of how Team GB got on over in the World Boxing Amateur Championships over in Milan. So things didn't go great there, but we'll be hearing from Kelvin after this. We come on this now, welcome back to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. Now, this week, folks, it was the beginning of the World Amateur Boxing Championships out in Milan.
Sorry about that, Rob.
That's the intro music for the boxing, Bren, is it? But, of course, the Team GB went out there. High hopes, Bren, after the Olympics last year, which was, such brilliant success with names like James DeGale and Tony Jeffries, of course, winning medals. But things didn't go brilliant out there. We spoke to Kelvin Travis, who took over from Terry Edwards, the GB coach, here about how England got on, and here's what he had to say to the show.
Overview, absolutely tough all the way through it. The seeding, the competition, you know, with world rank seeding for the first time, you know, eight boxers ranked, I thought was a good thing because it took out the top four and then the top eight in the world into separate sides of the draw, so you didn't need the four best in the world in your division before you got anywhere. So I think that was a good thing. The 3-3s, but nevertheless, it opened up, it freed up everybody then, and so the physicalities of the 3-3s has really been an issue for me.
More than you expected.
Yes, definitely. And one of the reasons we were in training camp with the French, Cubans and Germans and stuff in 14 different countries in France before we came here, and there was two or three guys, one guy in particular was knocked out in training. Three guys were basically knocked, you know, you'd know you'd give them a few days off.
Sure.
And they never sparred. And yet those guys have come through and won medals here because of that physically strong, you know? So a week, a couple of weeks ago, they were knocked, one of them knocked cold. and then,
this
one, you know,
our own guys now, Calvin.
No. I mean, the opposition. You know, sure. those strong nations. You know, physical strong nations. And one guy won a bronze, you know, a heavyweight last night. Really, you know, it's been rocky for quite a while. But that's the strength of the animal that's needed in many respects. So there are no way. Sorry, and that's the 3-3s element. You know, the physical thing.
So does the 3-3 minute rounds, does that suit physically stronger boxers as opposed to?
Of course, you need the strength physically and technically. Then it's very simple. It's not. Doesn't have to be the most flared boxer in the world, but you've got to have the strength to go with whatever talent you've got. There has been another factor, and that's the negativity in the styles and the covering up. That's been prevalent over here, where a guy covers up and doesn't throw a punch for a minute, you know, and yet still wins.
Sure.
Because he sneaks the shot. And that's been around for quite a while. But in the 4-2s, it's different. Because in the 4-2s, you can allow to cover slightly and be mobile, and then cover again, and you get away with it. Here, they haven't been able to get away with it as much, but they haven't been scoring. And we were assured by our representative, being Mick Batty, the RNJ, that that's what they were looking for. Now, we've had technical delegates out here from GB. They had technical meetings, but I haven't spoken to anyone at all, only Mick Batty, who's been the referee out here. And he's been, you know, in other words, information received. And he's been the one that said, sorry?
Sure. Kelvin, can you tell me was there a medal target going into this competition?
We had one medal, any colour, and the top ranking of eight. We've got a top ranking of eight with two boxers, world ranking of eight, two in the last eight, and we should have had a medal last night, definitely. There was that target.
Okay.
A bronze medal would have been easy last night if it hadn't been for the scoring element, as we're speaking, where Khalid deserved shots in his first contest, his first round of his contest last night, and didn't get them.
I suppose listeners will think back to the Olympics, Kelvin, and the success
yes.
that Team GB had with
sure,
boxers
sure.
like James DeGale.
Of course.
even boxers who didn't quite make it at the Olympics, like Frankie Gavin and Billy Joe Saunders,
yes.
They'd probably think maybe that one medal there should be
isn't
there
good enough target
for more.
Yeah, sure. Well,
what would you say to that assertion?
Yes, I appreciate that people would think that, but from when I first came in day one, the obvious switch to 3-3s was the thing that was going to impact most on the system that's been before. So totally different Olympics, totally different World Championships was in the making. I could see that. So right away, you know, the strength program had to be visited, the technical program had to be visited, and I've tried to do that. And with success in some parts. I mean, you got a guy like Khalid, who was in that batch you speak of, who was an 18-year-old novice. A year ago, not a novice, an experienced boxer at youth level, sure. But in terms of international competition, senior level, certainly 4-2s probably wasn't his type of event anyway. The 3-3s is better suited to him. So consequently, as with Bradley Saunders, who broke his thumb, who would have had a medal? Who would have had a medal? We would have probably doubled our targets here.
Was it tough on the team to lose that quality from the Olympics to the pro ranks? I think is it six boxers out of the eight when have gone pro?
Yeah, definitely. That's most certainly. There's been a constant drain to the professionals. That's why the management, the ABA management, sat down with the pros some months ago. I'm not sure it's not none of my doing, but sat down with the pros some months ago and got an agreement that boxers would be signing up to a contract with the ABA and get funded, and then they wouldn't be sort of going professional before 2012 type of thing. And so the funding element has got to be supported, because it's government money, it's public money. And so a guy, you spend £100,000 on a guy, eventually he goes professional, nothing goes back to the club, the BABA,
sure.
Or anything. So that was an agreement that was entered into, I think. It's none of my, not my remit to know, but I know that was entered into. And we've had a recent issue where one boxer wanted to turn professional, having signed the agreement with Frank Warren, or wanted to sign contract with Frank Warren, and so that agreement sort of put to one side somewhat. So
sure.
We need to retain that length of time. Like the Frankie Gavins were probably 6 years in the making, so at least. I remember Frankie Gavin as a 16-year-old. You know.
So how, Kelvin, do we? How does the sport stop that drain to the pro ranks? Is it a case that more incentives need to be offered?
Yes, in a word, yes. But there's more than incentive. We are in a Western culture where the sport is sort of thriving a lot at grassroots level because of the appeal now at grassroots level, and it takes time to filter through. There is quite a lot of boxers in clubs now, across the spectrum, and so it does take time to come through. In terms of Olympic potential, it takes time. It takes more time, as I'm sure you know. Those boxers who boxed successfully in the Commonwealth Games and the Olympics, then I know them personally. I train some of them privately, and you know, with England, when I was an England coach, and they had the potential. That's not about it. But what they did was put lots of mileage in. They travelled the world, and they got that experience. I remember, I think, Frankie Gavin in the Commonwealth year having 30 contests already before the Commonwealth and being
sure.
Tired. You know, so that kind of experience of travel, and that's what, you know, the Khalid Yafais of this world have been doing for the past, 4 years, Khalid Yafai now. Four years he's been in the making. And he is a world-class, athlete, I assure you.
Are we then at the beginning of that cycle again, Kelvin?
I hope so. And not just at the beginning, because we've got, you know, we've had a lot of time and effort spent previously. And sadly, when I came in, there was no program in place for that. There was one international in the program, as far as I was aware, and that was a one-off domestic international with
what
England
year,
and
what year
Sweden.
Was that, Kevin?
This is 6 months ago.
Right.
Believe me, when I came in and just as a phone call to come and get stuck in and help, because Terry Edwards had walked away, there was one international in the pipeline, and that was England-Sweden, and nothing else. And then in terms of a programme, I don't know what programme was there. There was nothing in black and white or anything. So Kevin Hickey was called in to do the job, to set up the programme, and he got myself and other coaches involved, and so we've laid out a format for a bigger programme, and it's about to be put into place in terms of home nations, hopefully, and an international competition.
That was the head coach of Team GB, Kelvin Travis. We're going to be hearing more from him in the second part of the show, but first we're going to take a quick music break. And welcome back to the show, 101.4 on FM. Brendan, we listened to the first part of the interview with Kelvin Travis over in Milan. Things didn't go well for Team GB out there. They did target one medal, but as we were saying off air, one medal seems quite low. I'm putting this out to all the gang there after the achievements of the great British team in the Olympics last year.
Definitely. After seeing the likes of James De Gale, Billy Joe Saunders, Frankie Gavin didn't make it, but that standard of boxer at the Olympics, same... what's our Irish friend called?
Darren Sutherland.
Darren Sutherland. Frank Maloney. I mean, there was an absolutely really, really high standard of boxing at that Olympics compared to the one box. You know, they had Amir Khan, who was the only representative of the previous Olympics. So, you know, hopes and expectations have been really massive when it comes to the boxing squad at Team GB. And I expected more than no medals.
Now, a quick stat, Gav, from the Team GB that entered the Olympics last year, six of that team have since turned professional. Does that raise concerns for the sport in the future? Maybe, you know, are we looking at 4-year cycles now, or just have you any thoughts on that about the drain?
In terms of if they are successful at amateur level, that they'll just get sucked into the professional ranks. I think that's totally true. You know, with the money and, you know, the celebrity sort of status you get with being a professional boxer now, it's too much. If you compare it to football, you know, you see all these, we talk about youngsters being sucked away from their professional clubs, the likes of Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal. When they see the money, when they see the lifestyle that they can live, if they move up that sort of step, it's sometimes too much. And can you blame them? To a certain extent, you know, James De Gale getting offered, you know, what was it, £1 or 2 million to turn into a professional fighter. He wanted a fight at 2012, but turning away that kind of money is just too much.
You're not going to sit around for 4 years waiting for another Olympics.
That's
when
I mean.
Someone offers you a multi-million-pound professional contract. It's just not going to happen.
I think the thing as well, Brendan, just reading it, various interviews at times over the last year, there is a great deal of frustration with some of the top pros in any of the amateur countries that actually when they do get to the tournaments, they feel that they haven't been kind of scored fairly. And because the system in amateur boxing is quite difficult to score, isn't it? We heard it last the Olympics. Now Kelvin Travis is talking about it. Now he feels that there were some of the bouts that the English boxers were involved in were dubious.
I have to be honest, the last Olympics in Beijing, there were some extremely, extremely controversial decisions towards Chinese boxers where it was extremely hard to believe the scores. We mentioned a few weeks on when we had Shakira Lee, the ladies boxer, about the new point system where the four judges all have a button and they all have to hit the button once they register a clean shot. Three of the judges have to hit the button at the same time for the shot to be registered. So you'd presume that it was quite a simple technique and a simple system, but it doesn't seem to work to the best that it possibly could. There's been so many controversial decisions,
and it seems yet again at this tournament that, you know, maybe a couple of instances where, you know, some of the English boxers didn't get the rub of the green, but you know, we asked Kelvin earlier on, you know, about the system, about those couple of teams we've been talking about, the incentives and the drain to the professional ranks, and this is what he had to say in the second part of his interview.
Looking from the outside in, I didn't think so. And when I arrived, then I arrived in a gymnasium that was two rings, a lot of punch bags. You couldn't even punch some of the bags because they were rock solid. And we got, I got five boxers who were injured when I arrived with hand injuries and the like. And so there was no one else, you know, simple as that. There was a development group, yes, which Jim Davison had been heading up for a number of years and had been developing young talent like the Martin Wards, you know, with the clubs. But that meets once, twice a month, two weekend, long weekends a month. And so that kind of a program was in place and it was working, that's for sure, but it wasn't wide enough. It was very... So, you know, in my opinion, that's the way I saw it. Okay, so Kevin, it has to be a wider program, and hopefully we'll put that in place. These next few months.
People listening will think now, like, they know a lot of hard work is going to be put in now and over the coming years, all building towards 2012. But the fear might be again that another success, more success in 2012, might lead to further drain, as in boxers.
To the professionals.
To the pro ranks, yeah.
Well, it could well be. It's been there in all my lifetime, the drain. And you wouldn't want, I wouldn't want any boxer to not be a world champion, you know, if the potential and the reward was there. You know, I think it's part of, you know, our sport, and it adds sometimes to the appeal to the general public and young guys on the street, you know, the world champions out there. But the reality in the world amateur boxing, then it has been a far cry from world professional boxing. Hence the launch this week of the World Series Boxing, and I'm sure you've heard a bit about that.
Sure.
In the press.
Sure.
And as I stand outside the hotel now, they're signing them up. You know, there's all the boxers here are being offered contracts to sign up to the World Series, which is effectively a 5-round pro contract. And that's what they're doing. You know, I mean, whether it's the right thing from an English point of view or a UK point of view, I'm not too sure.
How was that being received by the amateur community? The World Series event.
Mixed in many respects, because it's like a franchise that's being offered. Certainly Cuba are not involved in it because they don't want to lose their boxers to the professionals. The Cuba have had the monopoly in terms of talent and retaining them forever, you know, and even though they have a very young team here, they've been losing their top pros, as you know, because they've been, you know, dare I say, underdeveloped in the professional, in a financial reward maybe, so they've jumped ship, many of them, and so they've got a young team here, and they haven't been as successful as previous years, even though they've got a lot of talent.
You know, that almost sounds like doorstepping, and it sounds like the first stage of maybe an amateur dipping his toe into the pro rank.
Yes. I mean, it could well be, you know, a good thing. I'm not... I mean, the elements of what's going on here then is, I'm not 100% sure or say how they would unfold. And what I do see is, from my point of view as a coach, and just from a coaching point of view, it's a dilemma, because A, you've got an amateur boxer from the UK who's, having been a club international boxer, then becomes on the world stage, where it's definitely tougher, as I've just explained, and then you're looking at three competition zone of 3 months, where there could be 10 or 20 contests.
But is it not up to the amateur product then to really protect itself against these approaches?
Yes, I think so. That's in effect what AIBA's doing. Yeah, AIBA's doing that. That's what they're doing it for. I think they want to keep it in-house and have the development from start to of the career of a boxer. That's what they said in the promo. Start of the career of a boxer in a club environment, all the way through to a professional rank where over 5-2s you can make maybe $200,000 a year. That's the target they're talking about, so it's pretty large figures. Having said that, those are the top in the world who are going to be competing in that World Series.
Okay.
You know, the toughest out there.
Now, Bren, Gav and Dave, you're looking pretty disappointed there. I know things didn't go too well, but it wasn't all bad, Bren.
No, it wasn't all bad at all. There was, you know, Scott Cardell and Khalid Yafi.
Yeah, and I think the story with Scott Cardell or Cardell, I call him Cardell.
I think it's Cardell.
Yeah, yeah, this is a guy who came from, he wasn't even first choice, but he stepped in for Bradley Saunders, who did compete in Beijing last year and acquitted himself very well. So there are a few positives, Brennan. I think that's the way we should finish off with the interview with Kelvin Travis. So here's what he had to say about the future.
Well, the positives were from Scott in particular, who was sort of offered the berth at the last minute 7 weeks ago, having been to an Ireland training camp where Bradley then broke his thumb. And certainly Scott has been in the programme for a few years now. And only moved up, I've only been training him for 6 months in effect, as a 69-kilo boxer.
Sure.
And I've been saying to him, you're not 69 from day one. And so we had a negative from the club coach who said that, yeah, he's 69, he's a happy-going kind of guy. And I said, well, you can't compete internationally unless you sort of move down. He was given the opportunity. He grasped it with both hands. He's come out here, he's had three contests. He ran rings around an African, and without going into the names, a fellow who could take shots on the chin and take shots in the belly, I assure you. 30 points to zero, which is a really high score. And then met a well-ranked Frenchman, Bastien, who really gave a boxing lesson too. I think Bastien underplayed it. I think the French people got the tactics wrong. We sparred with Bastien in training camp, so I'd had a good look at him. I know him anyway, so I'd had a good look at him in terms of style. Then Scott has the right style to beat him but set about his task really well. Last night, came up against probably one of the best in the Cuban team anyway. It's world number one Cuban, Iglesias, and did okay, and he could have done more, believe it or not, but the big stage, the number one in the world, he doesn't hit, even at light welterweight, he doesn't hit as hard as he can do. He's got to go and get some more pop, as they say, and be able to punch with a bit more force. And had he done that, then he would have felt the confidence in the shots. But he took the guy on, he had a go at the guy. Tactically, then it was to draw the shots initially and draw out some of the steam out of the Cuban's legs, and we couldn't quite do that because the Cuban's pretty solid.
Okay.
So he did a great, he boxed in all we could have asked.
He did his best. From the black blue
yes, for sure. Kevin,
can you tell me what's coming up next for Team GB?
Team GB, we've got a week off. some about a week and a half off. I'll have 3 days off. It's too bad part of Team GB, but the guys have got a week off. We're back in on the 21st. We have a light week planned. We've got two or three weeks.
The next major competition will be
in America in the second week of October. We're going for a 3-week tour of America. We're going to be boxing three times in three different states with America's best in one competition, number two and number three in the third competitions. And during that time, the guys who were not going because they need a bit more rest maybe and a different focus, we're looking at the younger ones, the number two guys, taking them over there as well. So then we have a team going to Tama tournament in Finland, and that's a tough tournament, but it's just a week focus as opposed to a 3-week focus. And then we've got America coming over, we've got Russia coming over, we've got a full program up to the end of the year. We're looking to go to the East before Christmas in December. We had the President's Cup planned because it was, Taipei, Thailand, but they've changed the venue of that now, so we may be having to look at another location, all before the end of the year. Early in the year, next year, we've got the Commonwealth Federation Championship.
Yeah, the Commonwealth Games and the European Championship.
Yeah. We have a Commonwealth Federations first, and that's just boxing. And that's in India in March, thereabouts. And then we have so that'll be for a selected few at the GB and the home nations, of course. And then we have the Europeans, which will be the toughest, as I've already said. That's in Moscow. Not been announced yet, but we're sure. Feeling that it's going to be in Moscow. Will be announced this week. And then we've got the Commonwealth Games India, as you know.
There's a very busy program there to get through anyway.
And there's a lot more on top of that, yeah. I hope so. I'm going to be kept busy. That's the main thing. Yeah.
Okay. Kelvin, we wish you every success in the future. And
thanks, anytime. I appreciate the interest.
So that was Kelvin Travis, the Team GB coach, from Milan, speaking to us direct from Milan at the Amateur Boxing World Championships. Didn't go as well as Beijing, But we're going to end with a bit of boxing news. On FM Sports Team favourite Martin Rogan, who was supposed to be taking a rematch against Sam Sexton, has been postponed. It's been postponed for a month and will now take place in November rather than October. We're all big fans of the Belfast cabbie, Martin Rogan. Also, this weekend, this Friday, in fact, we have the English World Heavyweight Championship, which is going to be John McDermott against new up-and-coming star Tyson Fury. That's going to be up in Brentwood. And on the undercard, we've got the British Bantamweight title, which is Gary Davies versus Ian Napper. So keep an eye out. There's plenty of boxing coming up. And we'll be back on the sports team after this music break. Hello and welcome back to the 101.4 on FM Sports Show. Rob Mulhern has left the building. It's official. Rob Mulhern has left the building. Gav.
Yep.
Actually, no, not you.
Oh,
I'm going to speak to Dave. I'm going to speak to David. We've got the Formula One Grand Prix coming up this weekend. Is that right?
We have, yes.
So what's going on in Formula One?
Yep, right. Formula One's back after a fortnight's break. We're now in Monza, which is, of course, the home of Ferrari, who have been busy this week. Luca Badoa, who has failed to shine since his return to Formula One, is out, and Giancarlo Fisichella takes over and realises his dream at his home Grand Prix. Fisichella impressed at Spa last week in Belgium, finishing second behind new teammate Kimi Raikkonen to claim Force India's first ever points. Fisichella himself is replaced by fellow Italian Vittorio Liuzzi, who last drove for Toro Rosso in 2007. So it's going to be a big dream for Giancarlo Fisichella. Mm. What do you think about him moving to Ferrari, Brendan?
It surprised me, to be completely honest. I'm happy for the guy, but it surprised me. I was expecting Ferrari to get a bit more of a high profile racer in their team. I think maybe this summer we may see maybe a more high profile. I've heard rumours of Alonso maybe
as a replacement for Raikkonen or Massa, because Massa's going to be coming back next season, isn't he?
I don't think Massa's going to be back when they expect Massa to be back. I think the accident he had, obviously, you know, he's an athlete, so you have to see how quick he does come up. But I don't think he's going to be back for the start of next season. And Ferrari aren't a team who will want to be switching drivers in between the season. So I think they'll probably this summer evaluate it and make a firm decision whether to wait for Massa or to actually replace him. I'm not sure myself.
Would you not say Fisichella is a high-profile driver?
I think he was a high-profile driver. Obviously, he's been away from the top boys for a while. He's an extremely good driver. It would more be the age thing. To be completely honest with Fisichella, I'm not sure how old he is. Is he?
Well, he's around about.
He's in his 30s. He's definitely
34, 35. But then you look at Schumacher; he was still racing at 37 and winning world titles, wasn't he?
Yeah, but then you know he took a year out, and the old neck isn't the same as it used to be. We were expecting him to be back, weren't we?
Well, that was a dream, wasn't it, for many neutral sporting fans, really, because he's a sporting superstar, isn't he?
So, David, how is the standings going anyway? We've got, obviously, Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton. How are they doing in the Formula One?
Yes, obviously, Jenson Button's still leading the Drivers' Championship, but in the last couple of weeks, his lead has been cut somewhat. He's on 72 points, 16 ahead of teammate Rubens Barrichello, who's second. Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber are also still in the title race. Button and Hamilton both fouled, maybe through no fault of their own, in the last Grand Prix. Hamilton's on 27 points. He seems to be getting better as we're going along.
The car really is set up for next season, really. Hamilton's McLaren, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he didn't look like getting any wins earlier on in the season, did he, at all? But he's obviously got his first win under his belt, so you know he'll be going into the next Grand Prix. What do you think of their chances in the next Grand Prix?
The two Brits.
Yeah,
I'll give that to Gav. What do you reckon?
Well, you know, many people are saying Jenson Button's faltering. The pressure's getting to him. You know, with Barrichello breathing down his neck. You know, getting more points on the board. Both Red Bull cars, Vettel and Webber, winning races. You know. Button, it's tough to call. I want the guy to win. Because all he's been through with Honda, you know, in the past, the guy deserves this season.
We didn't think he'd have a drive this
That's
year.
That's what I mean. We? Most people didn't, including himself. I think in the end, Button's, if we look to the next race, Button's going to be up there. He's not going to win it, but he will be up there in the points. It's really going to go down to the wire, this one, I think, this season, you know. But we're going to see Barrichello and one of the other Red Bull drivers really, really get close to Button's tally of points, and it's going to go down to the last race like it did with Hamilton and Massa last season.
Right, so I'm going to put it to you. I'm going to put it to you both. Yep. Yes or no answer. Yep. Will Jenson Button win the Drivers' World Championship?
David, after you.
One word.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm going to agree with you both there, yeah. Guys. I'm going to agree, yeah. Also, we've... speaking, obviously, one of his closest rivals is Australia's Mark Webber. And with the Australians, obviously, we know the British had a great victory in the Ashes against the Australian team. But I understand we've been going for a bit of a one-day series against the Aussies, the English have. Is that right, guys?
Yes, we have.
How's it been going?
Not well at all. Obviously, yesterday, we capitulated to yet another defeat. We're now 3 down in the series. It's a 7-match series. So 3-0 down, which means that Australia can wrap up the series if they win at Lords on Saturday.
Is it a 5-game series or a 6-game?
Seven game series, yes. Okay. So we've still got 4 more left, but they could wrap it up with 3 to play. Yet again, the top order fouled. Andrew Strauss, the exception, scoring 63 from 72 balls, but Bapara, Shah and Pryor all were really poor, to be honest. Owen Morgan impressed as well, scoring 43, but our total of 228 for 9 wasn't good enough, as Cameron White, who's been looking quite impressive with the bat, scored 105, and captain Michael Clarke 52 to ease Australia home with 9 balls to spare.
So what's changed so much, do you think, David, since the Ashes series? What do you think has been the catalyst of the downfall in the one-day series?
We seem to have a sort of hangover whenever we do well, especially in the Ashes. You saw last year, the last time we won it, should I say, we should have kicked on, but we didn't.
Do you think because there's been a lot of stuff going around, do you think it's because they have too much cricket to play? Because could you imagine, let's say football, England win the Football World Cup, they're getting a couple of weeks off after that, if not more, you know? They had no time to celebrate the Ashes. Do you think, Gav, do you reckon the England team play too much cricket? Do you think this has anything to do with the downfall in the one-day series?
I really don't see... I wouldn't say so, no. If you look at tennis, you look at Roger Federer, he wins Wimbledon. Well, he's an exception, isn't he? There's only ever going to be one Roger Federer. But you look at Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, whoever wins a Grand Slam, you know, they win that Grand Slam, and then straight after, it'll be a smaller ATP event they'll be at, and straight after that, there'll be another event. I think it's with sport these days. You look at England now, at the players, they won on Wednesday. They're straight back in it on Saturday again, and they'll be expected to win. I think it's part and parcel of sport these days. I just think that I really can't put an excuse behind why England are 3-0 down. Obviously, because Australia are better than them, playing better.
They've had a few players come back themselves from injury, haven't they? They've had fast bowler Brett Lee come back, who is a major player for them. Yeah. So, but we mentioned Roger Federer there, and we're going to be talking about the US Open just after this music break.
This is the On FM Sports Show.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Show on 101.4 on FM. Gav, the US Open's been going on.
Andy Murray, of course, as everyone knows, that dreadful display against the Croatian Maran Cilic. Straight set, 7-5, 6-2, 6-2. So Andy Murray's...
Hold on, Gav, get nice and close to that mic. We're struggling to hear you there.
Is that all right, Brendan?
That's perfect.
Yeah. Do you want me to start again?
That's better. Yeah, go on, start again.
Might as well. Andy Murray, as everyone knows, lost straight set, 7-5. Is that better?
Yeah, talk into the mic, Gav.
7-5, 6-2. 6-2, so his hopes of getting that first Grand Slam dashed until the next Grand Slam, really, obviously. But elsewhere, Roger Federer is into the semi-finals. He beat Söderling in 4 sets. He's going to be up against a fourth seed,
world number four, Novak Djokovic, who beat Fernando Verdasco Gonzalez, is going to be up against Nadal later on, as well as Del Potro, the Argentinian sixth seed, up against Murray's conqueror, Cilic. I'm going for Federer to win this.
First off, what went wrong for Andy Murray?
Well, everything, really. Didn't it?
I didn't actually get to see his game. They've been on really late at night, but was it just lack of confidence?
Cilic was too good. I think he threw the first set away. I think he had two set points, didn't he? And he threw it away. And then Cilic just was too good for Murray on the day, I think.
Do you think there's too much pressure put on Andy?
No. Andy Murray, he loves it. He's fine with the pressure. World number
he
two.
Clearly wasn't.
Did he say that after the game?
No, but he lost.
Yeah, I don't think that's because of the pressure. I just think that's because Cilic was too good for him on the day.
Really?
Because you look at Murray, he got to the final last year,
and he's been doing very well at the... What Masters did he win before? He won Cincinnati, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
So he's been doing very well. The pressure isn't getting to him because he's world number two. I think on the day, Cilic was just too good for him. But it isn't going to be too long before we see Andy Murray with his first Grand Slam for sure.
Well, we all look forward to that. And we mentioned last week there was a big, big hurling game on in Ireland. It was the All-Ireland final, which was played again in Croke Park, which played against Kilkenny and Tipperary. Kilkenny were going for their fourth All-Ireland victory in a row, which is a record, guys. Mm. And they won. They beat Tipperary by 2 goals to 22 points to Tipperary's 23 points. And for those who missed it, you missed an amazing, amazing game of hurling. I'm not sure if you guys are really into it, but you should definitely check it out on the internet. Hurling is it's the fastest field sport in the world. It's one of the most brutal, but it's one of the most, when it's played brilliantly, it's one of the most skillful games. It's an amateur game, but definitely for any listeners out there or you guys who've never watched Irish hurling before, check it out. Also, keep an eye out in a couple of weeks' time, we've got the All-Ireland football final, which will be between Kerry and Cork, two Munster rivals, big rivals in the Gaelic football world. So everyone out there, tune in a couple of weeks. We'll let you know close to the date about it. But that's it. Gav, Dave, thanks very much for coming on and helping out with the show again.
Thanks, Brendan.
No problem.
And we'll see you all, we'll speak to you all next week. Thanks very much.